Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. We're tonight's entertainment. Gentlemen, we're tonight's entertainment.
Let's try that again. What's up, Ian?
Not much. Can you hear me now?
I most certainly can. Apparently, we're getting off to a great start here. Let's kick this off.
All right. Well, pardon the interruption, guys. I'm Ian Coyle. After nearly a year's hiatus, we're back in the GZL studio. Tony, what's the last thing that went away for so long and you're so glad to see it come back?
The McRib sandwich, the X-Files, Dr. Dre. Welcome to PTI, boys and girls. I'm Anthony Fernandez. Sorry we were gone for, like you said, almost a year plus 5 minutes, but we're finally back. With us nearing the quarter mark, we felt it necessary to boot up another podcast. Tonight we begin our headlines in Tennessee, where the Titanic is sinking. Here's something you don't hear often in a GZL regular season. The Titans are in last place in the AFC South. At 0-3, what has went wrong for the Titans, and when will they get their first win, Ian?
What has went wrong is starts under center. Chris Hernandez throwing the ball to the wrong team. Maybe they need to pay for some eye medication or something. But really, I'm not too worried about them. The AFC South is nothing but pillars of mediocrity out there. I think they'll turn it around. They do have a pretty rough schedule with the NFC North in their slot this year, but I think they'll turn it around and be back on top. I think the Colts are pretenders, and the other guys are, 50-50 at best.
Gotcha. I think that at this point it's a little bit of an overreaction. I think that the Bears and the Raiders were tough games. The Jags were on the road. It was a close game. It's tough with their upcoming schedule for sure. Houston, Green Bay, Minnesota, Indy, San Diego, Baltimore, KC. But I do think they will get their first win this week. I think that with the Colts in first, like you said, they're very, very catchable. So I say this week.
We move on to Seattle, where the Super Bowl VII champ Seahawks are now 1-3 and have begun the mass exodus of fire sale mode. What happened to the Seahawks, and is it over for them in 2019?
I don't think it's over for them quite yet. I do think that they've made some trades that I would not have made if I were them, but you never know. Nick might view some of those trades as restocking. He gave up, I think, a lot for Cameron Shaw. It'd be interesting to get your take on that since it was you involved. I think the Bills and Bucks losses were very ugly, uncharacteristic on his part. But even the Cardinals win and the Panthers win were ugly. But the reality is they're two games out. Seattle started 1-3 last year, finished 8-8. 1-5 the year before, finished 7-9. 2-2 in 2015 and went 13-3 and made the Super Bowl. So I'm not going to rule them out yet. What about you?
Yeah, I think they had a rough early schedule. Obviously, they got creamed in week one, but I think they've got a pretty favorable schedule the rest of the way. Obviously, some of their division games are going to be pretty rough. And they do have the Lions and a few other quality teams on that schedule down the road. But I think they have a pretty good shot to still come in with a wild card if they want. They do kind of remind me of my team, my start last year with a lot of injuries, and it's rough to see that many injuries this early in the season and still keep your head up. I think on the schedule here, we're talking about that trade a little later, so I'll save that or my take on that here for a little bit later.
Fair enough. Next up, can a tiger change its stripes? This offseason, the Bengals quietly traded Johnny Football and a first-round pick for quarterback Josh Freeman, to myself. Some gripe that this is just more of me getting too much for my aging vets, but the Bengals are 3-1 and only a field goal away from beating the undefeated Ravens in Baltimore last week. Ian, do you think the Bengals are a real threat for Super Bowl 10, and is the trade more likely to land Freeman as the MVP of the league or Tinnen as the GM of the year?
Well, you know, I think that was a pretty good trade for them. They needed that piece. They've got some nice pieces at running back and at the skill positions. They've got a decent line, so I think that might have been the key to a good run for them this year. The North is definitely winnable. You got the Ravens, who are usually pretty good, and it might come down to the wire there, but they have a very favorable schedule this year in terms of who they match up against. So I think they are a very good threat to win, to at least get to the Super Bowl. And if they do, I think that Freeman as MVP is very likely, as well as GM of the year for Brady.
Wow, going both. It's so weird talking about the Bengals as a Super Bowl contender, not necessarily because of the league, but because of how we know them historically in the real league. But I don't know. I said at the beginning of the year they were my pick to play the Packers. I think that they're both capable. Tinnen won GM of the year in 16. Freeman won MVP in 17. He was a runner-up, I think, in 14 or 15 with me, too. I don't really like Freeman as the MVP. I think, you know, as you made some valid points, it's easy to give him credit. But the Bengals did win 9 games last year. I think the real MVP of the team is Bernard, who's averaging 100 yards a game, has 5 touchdowns. Kind of a dirty secret on Freeman, as a person who had him his whole career, is when the running back's not playing good, he doesn't play good. So I think Freeman pushed him over the hump, but I do think that ultimately it's what Brady has done with his trades, bringing in guys like Parrish, Moore, Munoz, and also drafting solid players like Hasty and probably the MVP or the rookie of the year, Ty Sombrello. So he's done really well. I like what Brady's doing, and I think that they are a threat for the Super Bowl. What's next? Toss-up. Toss-up's a regular segment on PTI. For this game, we were asked to pick from 2 different choices and then debate our selection. Tonight, we're tossing up hypotheticals in the GZL standings. Race to the top. GZL has never had the distinction of having an undefeated team. Just a month into the season, we're way too far from making any predictions of a team going 16-0. But with just 4 teams left, it's not too early to forecast a little. Toss-up, Ian, who will be the last undefeated team? The 4-0 Bucks, 4-0 Ravens, 4-0 Lions, or the 3-0 Bears?
Well, as much as it pains me to say as a real-life Buccaneer fan, I don't think the Bucks make it solely on the fact that they've never beat the Packers. Also have the Rams and Raiders Ballot. Later this year. So they've got a rough go ahead. Obviously the Bears and Lions, one of them can't go undefeated because they play each other. And I think we'd be remiss if we didn't have some sort of dig at Tom about the Lions. The Bears probably have the easier go there, but again, they've already had a bye week, so they got a long haul. So I'd say probably the Ravens have the best shot there. Again, back to in talking about the Bengals, the AFC North schedule is pretty light this year. So aside from games against the Bengals, I think they've got a pretty mediocre schedule, so they probably have the best chance.
Very good points. I am glad that you went Ravens because I was staring at them and it was hard not to go them. Ultimately, just historically how good the Steelers have been, I think that will be a tough game this week. Like you said, I don't think the Bucks make it out of this week undefeated. And that pretty much leaves the Lions and Bears who play each other. So I'm going to take the winner of that game. And while I do tend to bash on Tom a lot, he's done a really good job this year. And they're home. They have a balanced offense, which is not something you can always say about them historically. They're doing really good. They're like top 15 in both. So I think the Lions have a good chance, but I just lean towards Lawrenson. It's something I do every year. Sometimes it bites me, but he's a great GM. He's had 7 visits into the end zone, and they've only allowed 1 touchdown. So I think that the Bears are going to be the last undefeated team.
The other side of that coin, there's only three teams left without a win. While chances are slim of another team matching the ineptness of the 0-16 Eagles from 2 years ago, there are still some puzzling teams to remain winless. Toss-up last winless team, the 0-4 Chiefs, the 0-4 Jets, or the 0-3 Titans?
This one's pretty tough for me because, to be honest, I don't really understand how any of them are winless. I think that they're all pretty good teams with good GMs. If you just asked me off the top, I'd probably say the Jets because I'm really high on their draft picks lately. But when you look at their schedule, it's just tough. KC, Buffalo, San Diego, Arizona. Tennessee, I already got winning this week earlier, so they're pretty much out. And KC, I like their chances against Jacksonville and Houston, so I'm going to go the Jets. I don't understand it, but they're my pick. What about you?
Well, you know, I don't think any of these teams go the full year 0-13 or 0-16 or whatever.
No.
I honestly see the Jets probably winning this week with how the Seahawks have been playing.
Wow.
Like you said, the Chiefs have the Jags here and Texans and, you know, Titans coming up. But I think the Titans are going to be – they've got a few – maybe they win this week at Houston, but after that they've got a few pretty tough games. I think they're probably going to be the last of those three to win, but it probably will only be a couple weeks.
Wow, that would be pretty crazy. Do the Titans even have their first-round pick? I feel like they traded it. I don't know. That's uncharacteristic of Mr. Neeson. Okay, where are we at? Likely, unlikely. Well, the Bengals in the playoff race is quite interesting. They do have Josh Freeman under center. Two teams in the race with unlikely gunslingers are the Malik McNabb-led Eagles and the Terrell Pryor-led Colts. Toss-up, who is more likely to make the playoffs, the Eagles or the Colts?
Well, I think this one's a pretty easy Eagles. I think the Colts have a little bit tougher of a route. Eagles are in a very mediocre NFC East right now, tied for the lead with the Redskins at just 2-2. I think it's a winnable division, certainly for a team led by an unlikely quarterback like that. You know, you're not talking about trying to go 12-4 to win a division. 8-8 or 9-7 is going to probably take the East, and I can see McNabb leading the Eagles to that kind of record.
Well, I can see the Eagles definitely being the good choice here, and I think that while they might get to that record, I don't think McNabb will have much to do with it. I think that the guy to look at is Jeremy Hill, who, you know, they got a lot of crap for taking him so early. It was like the number two pick, and I took Gurley 5, and now they're 1-2 in rushing yards. So, you know, you've seen some success with a high-drafted running back this year, and I think that he's going to carry the Eagles. I really tried to make a case for the Colts. I think that Pryor is a better quarterback. Aside from the Titans maybe coming back, which obviously you've made a good case why they might not. I don't think there's anybody else in the AFC South to worry about. But I got to go Eagles. I'm impressed by Neil. I think they should be 3-1. Redskins are just so-so. Cowboys and Giants struggling. So I will have to agree with you on that one, sir.
What's next? Oddsmakers. Oddsmakers is a regular segment on PTI that alternates with the over-under. For this game, we assign odds to various league topics. Tonight, we focus on some unusual GZL records and stats. Wicked good start. The Pats have started off strong, racing out to an early lead in the AFC East behind solid play from Ryan Nassib. What are the odds they break their four-year drought and secure a trip to the playoffs?
Well, if you look at their team on paper, there's a few defenses. I mean, at every position, I just love what Matt's done. He's made excellent draft picks, but they're statistically bottom half in pretty much every category except run defense, where they're 13th. It's really their offense that's doing so well. I know that Matt's had some displeasure with Nassib, but he's played well. And, you know, I thought he'd be a good quarterback when I traded him away, but I didn't think he'd be this good. So I'm happy for him. I'm happy for them. I think Miami has really owned the division the last few years, and that shows in their banners. They cannot afford to get swept by them this week, but I think they will win that game. I'll go as high as 60%. They break their playoff drought. What about you?
Yeah, I'm kind of thinking the same thing. One of the things that they have going for them certainly is they play all of their division games before week 12 or by week 12. So they will know pretty early on where they stand in the division. And, you know, they've got a few smattering of some other teams out there. But they've still got, you know, the Texans and Seahawks on the schedule. I also think that they'll make the playoffs and break that drought. I'm going to give them just shy of what you said, but I'm going to give them about 55% chance.
Very solid, very solid. Lion like Lions. The Lions are off to a 4-0 start, but would you believe with all of their individual records, they've only got one 10-win regular season ever? What are the odds they get to double-digit wins this regular season, Ian?
You know, again, going to the schedule, I think they've got a very favorable schedule this year. They've got the AFC South, and they've got the like NFC East. Again, both kind of soft divisions right now, in my opinion. Many winnable games in there. They got the Bears and Packers that are always going to play them hard. But getting to 10, I think, will be kind of tough, even with a 4-win start. I could see them going, you know, kind of 50-50 the rest of the way, and that gets them to what is that, 10-6? Yeah, maybe they hit 10-6. I don't see them going any higher than 10-6 though. And even at 10-6, I'd give them probably only about a 50% chance to hit that.
Well, the Lions, I always tend to operate from a negative standpoint and then work backwards. Not because of any disrespect to Tom. I think he's a great guy. I think he's a decent enough GM. But he certainly does things his own way, and I think that's worked to his benefit before. When he went to the Super Bowl, it's worked against him many times, like his tenure in New York. But it's hard to argue with what he's doing right now. And as many individual records and all the times we've seen Stafford in the record books, they've never been 4-0. Their best start ever was 9-7 in 2013, and they were 3-0 that year, and they finished 9-7. So it's certainly possible they could drop off. I did go back and check just to see how they close out seasons. They were 4-6 to close out 2017, lost their final two in 2016, so they do struggle some down the line here, but I think they will do good. I think 4-0 is pretty hard to mess up. They just got to win, like you said, half of the remaining games. I'm going to go ahead and I regret this. I'm going to say 100% chance that they win double-digit games in the regular season.
It's bow time. Atlanta's Bill Callahan is on pace for nearly 5,500 yards passing this season, which is good enough for second all-time and within reach of Matt Stafford's all-time record of 57-86. Unfortunately, his GM just traded away his number one target. What are the odds that he breaks that 57-89 passing record this year anyway?
Well, I'm definitely interested to hear what you say about the trade, because I think that was a win for you. And, you know, with Nick, it's really hard to gauge at the start who won a trade and who didn't, because I think he leaves both trades feeling like both teams won. So I really like Conway a lot. I think he's a good wide receiver. I don't think that the production will drop off too much for Bo. I think that the receiver production of the guy headed out is a reflection of Bo, not vice versa. So I think that even though, like you said, some guys like Perez have struggled since you brought him over from New York, I think Bo's got a good chance. 5,500 is his pace. He's got to pick it up a little bit for that. But I think he's capable. I don't know how high I want to go, but I would say I'd give him a solid 35% chance, maybe even go as high as 40% to break the record. What about you?
Yeah, you know, it's pretty tough to maintain that pace all year. A lot of guys, you know, even running backs in the past, you know, start out with the gate pretty strong and then kind of fade out over the course of the season. In terms of the trade, honestly, I got Nick's the one that offered that trade, and I really accepted it as is because it was one of those deals that looked pretty hard to pass up, getting a potentially high second in the 49ers pick, who have historically performed in the bottom half of the league. And this year looked to be, you know, kind of on that same trajectory, and picked up a guy with better hands, just an inch shorter. So my experience with Madden, it's not quite as, it's a lot more plug and play than it is in the real league, where you got to have some chemistry there. But you never know, you know, it's tough to say how that inch reads in ones and zeros. So it's possible that the trade will come back to bite me, but I think that it was a solid move there, and definitely some winnable defensive teams coming up in terms of solid stats, and my defense right now is playing pretty poorly, so we'll definitely be in catch-up mode for a lot, which helps those passing numbers.
I like that trade for you.
Oh, go ahead.
I was just going to like that trade for you.
Yeah.
Okay, what's next? The report card. Report card is a rare and underused segment on PTI. For this game, we are given an accomplishment or notable event and are asked to give it a report card grade. Tonight, we focus on various GZL topics. Start off with Oakman. The Bills took a chance on a different kind of player when they took 6'8 defensive end Sean Oakman with the 21st overall pick in 2018. He had 11 sacks as a rookie. He already has 3 sacks in the first month of this season. Few teams needing pass rush passed on Oakman and took a defensive end in the second instead. The Jets were one of those teams. They took a pass rushing linebacker instead. What grade do they get for passing on Oakman at 17 overall?
At 17 overall, I think is, you know, it's tough to gauge with linemen like that. So much depends on what type of defense you're playing, whether it's 3-4 or 4-3. You know, whether you play high aggressive or low aggressive. But I mean, the raw abilities of Oakman there, the 6'8", the 290, I mean, that's just screaming defensive in there. A little bit surprised that, I mean, with the 81 speed, it's surprising that he lasted that long. I don't recall who I picked that year, but I think I was definitely – oh, maybe that was Bo's year or something. No, it was last year. Anyway, I think, you know, he was a really good pick at 25, and I think at 17 he would have been definitely an A pick. So passing on him, yeah. I'm going to say probably a C.
Yeah, I do think that Anthony Barr is a decent player, which is who they took instead. I mean, it's just like the next one. It's a revisionist history at this point. I thought Oakman would be good. I didn't think he was going to be this good and this dominant. I mean, he could do some pretty scary things. I mean, he could put like 15 sacks up this year, which is a second-year guy. That's pretty intense. I was one of the teams that took a defensive end at the top of the second. I took Eli Mazar and passed on Oakman. I thought he'd be there in the second, so who knows. I would say the Jets, in their particular situation, I would give them maybe like I'm going to go C+, just a little bit better, because I do think Oakman at 17 would have been a little bit high.
Draft hype. The Bucks made a ton of draft trades this year before taking Dorial Green-Beckham. After all the hype, he's got just 7 catches for barely 100 yards, and the leading passing rookies are third-rounders or later. Tampa taking him at 1-3 gets a blank grade.
Well, I mean, it's my pick, so I mean, I got to give him an A+, right? he was never going to be that great this year. We got Mike Evans. He wasn't taken to start right away, so he's been playing in the slot. I thought he'd be a little better than he's doing right now, but truth be told, we're really leaning on Gurley, so we're getting our passing stats from the tight end and from the bigger one and two receivers. If you look around the league, though, guys like Cameron Shaw that you just traded, big guys are up there. Aaron Drogan's doing big things. They lead the league in receptions. So I think ultimately it'll shake out as an A-plus pick. Looking at it right now, I'd have to agree that he's not going to be on any rookie of the year ballots. And, you know, it's going to look bad for me. What about you?
Yeah, I mean, I agree with that. It's, you know, it's hard to take a pick in this type of format in the first round as a developmental pick, which I think you did in this case. You know, you're looking at two, three years down the road, his production and his potential in taking that pick at 1-3, which in the league is the right way to go. But in this league, everyone values immediate production. And so it's tough to grade that out. I still think, like you say, down the road, it's going to end up being an A grade. I think right now, for me, I'm one that values that development rather than instant gratification a little bit more. So I think I'd still give it a good solid B+.
Speaking of instant gratitude, we have a revisionist history here. We're going to get to create a trade from 4 years ago. You obviously remember 4 years have passed since the infamous AJ Green trade that you had barely in your tenure, caught some slack for it, got slammed for it. AJ is now playing for his third team since that trade, hasn't come anywhere close to his perceived potential. So looking back on it now, all things considered, Atlanta gets a blank grade for the AJ Green trade.
Yeah, I remember at the time the big knocks were AJ Green's good for 1,500 yards a year and, you know, 8 touchdowns. And, you know, I certainly did overlook a few things in that trade with regards to Wheaton and Perez coming in with very underdeveloped hands. So the drops that were seen from AJ Green that year continued with the new guys, and certainly it led to the jettisoning of Matt Ryan a little earlier than probably would have been necessary with AJ Green still there. But that second round pick was key in us being able to get Bo Callahan the following year. As it was part of the package of picks that got us to move up to 1-6 to get that. And really, I think the Jets ended up getting almost nothing back out of it. You know, when they traded him to the Raiders, they got Lewis Murphy, who didn't hardly do anything for him. So I think definitely in terms of the individual trade, the Atlanta got better, the better end of the deal. In terms of just an overall deal, probably I'd give it probably a C+ in terms of the what we got out of it. But, you know, with Callahan is a big part. So.
Yeah, I mean, we were just talking about Bo Callahan and breaking league records. So anything you got to do to get him, I mean, it's butterfly effect at this point to say how things would have shook out otherwise. But I think I was one of the few people that didn't slam that trade too much, if I recall. I think, yep. I remember liking Perez. I think he's got a lot of potential. I know that he's dipped a lot the last few years, but you got 3 years basically at about 1,000 yards, which isn't far off of what AJ Green was doing. So I don't know, man. I think that the biggest crime of that trade is that Perez hasn't got more points invested in his catch. Because, I mean, if you get that up to about 85, he's going to be better than AJ Green. So I would say, looking back, I didn't think it was that bad then. I don't think it's that bad now. And the only knock would be looking back and knowing that Perez didn't quite meet his potential progression-wise. But I would still give it a solid B+.
What's next is happy time. Next, time to get all happy, boys and girls, as we go to the big finish we call happy time. Happy trails to starting Packers QB Jimmy Clausen. Newly acquired Matt Glennon has played pretty well, and it looks like to hang the first loss on his old team in Tampa this week. Anthony never beat the Green Bay Packers in a regular season or playoff game. Any reason to think that'll change this week?
We're behind on time, so very simply put, no. Happy anniversary to Bears wide receiver Jorge Lloyd. This week last year, you broke your collarbone in what became your last game as a Buccaneer. Ian, he's off to a big start in Chicago this year. How good can he be?
He can be pretty good. As long as they start and keep running the same type of game plan, I think he'll be pretty solid. I think he's going to put up another... I think he'll probably break 1,000 yards this year. Happy birthday to dearly departed Giants GM James Perrone. The Super Bowl V champion would have been 47 years old a couple weeks ago, back on August 2nd. Tony, you knew him as good as anyone. What do you think he'd say about the Giants being in last place in the NFC East?
I think the only thing that would make him matter is that Johnny Manziel is about to be a starting quarterback. But, happy birthday, big guy. In not so happy news, this Friday, the 21st, is actually 1 year since his passing. So it's been a little bit of a rough week, but it's nice to keep him in my thoughts. And I just know that our work here in PTI and your excellent contributions to the show help live on some of that those memories I had with him. So thanks for pitching in, especially all you did this week with coming up with the questions as we began. I really enjoyed it, and I'm happy to be back with you.
Yep, me too. It's been a long time, but it's good to get back into it. And that is the final bell, folks. That's our show. Thanks for tuning in, Chuckleheads. Make sure to check the forums. There's some great articles in there. And,
Yeah, thank you all for listening. It's a lot of activity this year, especially with the team news, with the increase in GZQ payout. So hope that continues. I would love to try to get an episode of this every other week or so. So hopefully we'll see you in a few weeks. Good night, Canada. Thanks, Ian.
Later.